Welcome to Aspire. This radio program is being recorded for the 13th day of December 2020. I'm laughing because I hit almost the wrong button and we would have been in another universe had I not seen it very quickly. Anyway, that's just the way old Greg is, so I understand. We're going to go into How Do I Part 2. We did Part 1 yesterday, and now we're going to do Part 2. And these are from a series of emails that I get from those of you who have commentary on what I am talking about, what I'm doing, and oftentimes have really great questions. And sometimes there's this little gem in there that you want to know about. How do I do this? How do I do that? And so we're going to continue on with that. I want to thank those of you who do write in. If you ever have a comment or question or something I can help you with, please feel free to write me at greg@aspire.org. That's greg@aspire, A-S-P-I-R-E.org, O-R-G. And, of course, any question you have is of interest to me, especially if it's about something important to you, like something we're working on here on the radio. And just to answer some of your questions real quick before we go on, retreats. Everybody asks about retreats. They are for those of you who are really looking into doing something extraordinary with your life. They are not for the looky-loos, the people who want to go and relax and do all of that spa stuff. It has nothing to do with spa. This is serious work that we're doing, and serious in the idea that it is effective if you use it, if you can understand it, if you can appreciate the depth of it. It's all about your spiritual evolution. It is not about passing on philosophy or religion to a person. So I want to make that very clear. I am not a proponent of trying to be a Buddhist or a Zenist or anyist. I just don't do that. I am interested in spiritual awakening, and that's what I offer my students, and there are very definite steps a person has to take. They are not philosophical. They are deliberate steps in living, in achieving consciousness, in moving towards the depth of love. So I just want you to kind of understand that. When you write me and you say, I would like to, but could I have more information? I point to the website. If you want more information, it's all there on how to come to a retreat. It would be helpful if you could come to a workshop before a retreat. The meditations that I offer at retreats and in workshops are extremely important to the process which we're entering into. So just so you know. Okay, the first question goes to Thomas. He does not tell me where he lives. How do I not want vengeance on people who are hurting us? Thomas. Well, please understand, and I'll try to say this in the best way I possibly can. Vengeance is unnecessary because whomever I am seeking vengeance upon will eventually be myself. I will reap that somewhere along the line of my life, or find myself doing the very thing that I am taking vengeance on with another person. So at first, it is something that you have to see as futile, and that the resistance towards doing anything unkind towards another person for the sake of vengeance isn't going to change that person. And it usually doesn't rectify any situation per se. The vengeance factor is based on, in my case, the Greg Penn ignorance. And he always wants to survive, so he will see anyone who opposes him as someone who is his enemy, and he will want vengeance on them. I've had plenty of people do terrible things to me, lie, cheat, and steal. I've had colleagues do it. I understand the whole kit and caboodle. It isn't that you will not want vengeance. You have to see the uselessness of it, the futility of it. And there is no way I am ever going to be able to talk you out of vengeance. Just no way. You're going to seek it. You're going to want it. Your ego, your emperor of all malice will want it. There is no way you're not going to want it. It passes through everybody in the manner of seeking survival over the fittest. And if somebody else is more fit than us, then we want to take them down so we can survive. It's all a matter of DNA. So if you understand all of that and you have some compassion about it, you will start to see that, gee, you know, no matter what I do, I'm not going to change this person. No matter what I think, say, or do isn't going to change the situation, really. And even though I may use leverage to try to get what I want or think that I can get what I want through vengeance, the end all is that eventually, and I tell you this in all given truth, it comes back on us one way or another through the course of a lifetime, through the course of many lifetimes. What do you think Thomas Karma is but me seeking, you seeking vengeance over people that we want to believe have harmed us? So how do I look at my enemy? Maybe that would be the best thing. Why do I make people my enemy? Because they oppose me? Because they say untrue things about me or you? Why do we have enemies? We have enemies because those people and their traits live in us. I have seen in my enemy the traits that a Greg would have. I never underestimate those traits. I never think, oh, I would never do that. I can never think those kind of thoughts. I might well do it. You know, it's not beyond Greg to do dumb things. So I have to look at it and ask myself, what am I doing? What is this really all about? Why is this enemy within me coming out in my life, in another person? How did I draw this person to me? Once I understand that the people that oppose me are the states of mind and emotion that live within me, then I go to resolve those things in me and not take vengeance on them. To love my enemy, as Jesus said, as myself, because it is myself. Now, for me to think that it is anything else or anything less than that is really an error on my part. And a lot of people do that. A lot of people like to think, oh, I don't deserve to have this kind of person in my life. Well, they wouldn't be there if it weren't something that I need to look at about myself. So to the people who are my enemies, I recognize, I could feel that way, or I have felt that way, or maybe I want to feel that way. Maybe I am missing the whole shebang because I think I'm better than them in some way or another. So if you understand what I'm talking about, Thomas, then you won't really want revenge. You will want transformation. You may want metamorphosis. You may want a change in you, a change that depicts a certain way in which you go about living your life from the premise of love rather than from hate and fear. Then you will start to look at people from the point of view of the honor it is to have them And the way you live with them in that honor is to respect them, even your enemy, to love them. Because as you love them, you love yourself, that disowned part of ourselves that we want to believe just doesn't exist. I mean, we really want to think that our poop don't stink, but it does. And it precedes us in everything that we do as we go about our life. So there you are, my dear. I hope that helps you, Thomas. Take a look at it. Seek not vengeance. Seek awareness. Seek understanding about yourself. Look inside you. What is it about this person? What is it in me that made them possible? Just keep looking at that question and looking at that question and looking at that question. And if you do, it'll help. I promise you, it'll help if you're sincere. And if you're not, you'll just go to the primitive way of dealing with things like a Neanderthal. Bang them on the head with your club. I hope that helps you. I do. Please forgive me. Namaste. The next one comes from Pamela. She lives in San Diego. She says, how do I not want what I want? Pamela. And she went into a long email about all the things she wants and all the things she didn't get and she thought she deserved and all of that. So that's the, I took the nugget out of that and thought it would probably be the best way to answer her question. This is a hard one for people to deal with. We're filled all day with want, but what do we want? We want what we believe will compensate for our low self-esteem, our negative side, maybe our futile side. We want what we want because we're trying to compensate for what we believe we don't have. So we want money and we want power and we want fame and we want fortune and we want good fortune and we want all these things to happen. And we don't understand that the tentacles of what we want live deep inside of us in the form of our insecurity with love. We have no sense of authentic love. We have only the sense of a love that comes from emotionality. And because my emotionality is more important to me than the sake of love itself, the authentic, I let ugly things be harbored in my human heart. Fear, anger, jealousy, pride, resentment, all of the things that most people think of as common, normal, or what should be there. A lot of people actually think those are the things that should be there, but they aren't and they shouldn't and they is. So it makes it very difficult to not want. Wanting distracts me from the meaning of my life. Wanting distracts me from the message of my life. Wanting allows me to live with myself in very ugly ways, in ways that are emotionally depriving me of what could be authentically beautiful in my life, beyond my emotions and beyond my ideals and beyond whatever it is that I think of myself would escalate and elevate my self-esteem. We're struggling with our own idea of ourselves for the most part. I want you to consider this wanting. From the moment you go to sleep at night to the moment you wake up and then go through your day, it's a constant wanting. I don't want to do this. I don't want to do that. I wish I didn't have to do this. I wish I didn't have to do that. I want this. If I only had that, I wouldn't have this to do. And blah, 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 blah. We just make so many problems for ourselves. And in doing so, we miss the meaning of ourselves and the meaning of our life. So I want you to understand, dear heart, that this whole idea of wanting is just a matter of diversion, so I don't deal with what is really at stake here. And that is, everything is coming to me in the order of my karma. Everything is there not as punishment, not as reward, but as the situations and the conditions that crank open, if I'm allowing, my mind and my body to be put aside for the sake of a love that is greater than anything I have ever known in my life. There is a beauty that lives within each and every one of us that we insist upon missing because it doesn't make any logical sense and we don't think that we, quote unquote, deserve it. So we go on and on and on with our life as a matter of labor, not love. And when my life is labor and not love, I am not doing the things that are significant to my life. Significance is found only in mercy. To be merciful. Blessed are the merciful, for they shall obtain mercy. One of the most powerful statements Jesus ever made, blessed are the merciful. What does that mean? Blessed are those who forgive and give. They forgive and give in spite of the appearances of whatever kind of evidence my ego has manufactured in order to make me believe that someone is good, someone is bad, someone's right, someone's wrong. I can't do this. The evidence that says, well, you can't afford to do that, or you can't emotionally afford to do that, or you really shouldn't do that. That isn't right. Mercy is the ability to see the bigger picture of our life and not to be fooled in the ideas and ideals of what is right and wrong, good and bad, that we have accepted culturally, religiously, politically, and socially. Now, that's a big one right there. And to miss the opportunity to transcend all of that is the true sin of life, the missing of the mark, as it were, because each and every one of us has the chance to do that, to begin to see the meaning of our life. So when you look at the things you want and you realize what Buddha said, to want nothing with all of your heart. That seeming paradox is extremely important to comprehend. And though it may not be something you can comprehend in your intellect, it can be something that you realize in your authentic, in the part of you that is deeply real, substantive. You can do this. Forgiveness, love, kindness, all of these things are a lifestyle. And if you really want to develop an interesting life, you have to develop a lifestyle that's interesting. It can't come out of need or want. It can't. If it comes out of need and want, you'll miss. So the effort, spiritually speaking, is to come to a place where you accept everything that is before you and realize that whatever is before you is within you. And no matter what you do, no matter what you think, say, or do, it isn't going to change until you make a transformation, a profound change within yourself. If you do that, if you can do that, which you can, everything will change. That will really, really help you. And I guarantee if you listen to what I say and try to understand it and go beyond the version of your philosophy, religion, and beliefs, you'll start to see that there is a whole new world within you. Many are called to this, I find, but in my many, many years of teaching, over 50, I can tell you very few people seek it. It's up to you. I hope that helps you, Pamela. Please forgive me. Namaste. Well, the last one is the Dilly Whopper. This is from Rick in Los Angeles, and he says, how do I stop hating? It isn't that you stop. It's that you see the futility of hating. Greg and Rick and everyone listening to my voice right now will always be in the hater modality. We are always on the verge of hating. Always. Say the wrong thing. Look the wrong way at someone or something. Feel disproportionate in your ability to handle something that is facing you. And you will find that the ego will come out. The human heart will come out and say, I hate that. Hating is a natural part of the human experience. I'm not giving it credence by saying that. I'm just telling you, it is the natural part. And what you want to do with that is strictly up to you. I don't know what you want to do with that. But if you start to understand, again, the futility of it, like the question I gave to Thomas on vengeance, you will start to understand that this hate thing is an indulgence that none of us can afford. We have to move on to higher ground. So it would be best for you to examine your emotions and really look at them, Rick. What is it that you hate, and why is it that you've assigned the value of hate? And I'll bet you it happens without you saying a word or even thinking about it. It's provoked by just the way we are, the way we live our life. We live our life on this verge of hatred, of disappointment, of hurt and pain, because we live too much by the human heart. And the human heart is very frail, fragile, foolish, egotistical, and angry all the time. And while it can be sympathetic and appear to be kind, in the background, it wants a payoff for all of those things. So it isn't magnanimous at all or philanthropical. It simply is human heart. And it is trying to help us survive, because that is in our DNA. And you have to come to a certain point in your life where you draw the line and you are no longer going to be living, working, and having your being from the sympathy of the human heart. The human heart is the greatest weakness that we have, because it connects so deeply to our emotionality. Rick, look at your hatred. See how you hate. What has it done for you? What has it given to you? It is a real karma maker. People often think that hate is the opposite of love, but it isn't. Not at all. Hate is hate. And it is the essence of human love. I've married a lot of people in my day. I don't do that anymore. But as I watched them get married, it was obvious to me that love was not present in their union. What is it that makes people come together? How do they see one another? What is it? They have to have a mutual affection. And as long as they have that affection and that mutuality in it, and there is something in it, that affection, that pertains to their survival, their psychological, emotional, social, and physiological survival, they love each other. And truthfully, it isn't love. So there you are. Let love live you, dear Rick. I hope that helps you. It's a life effort. Please forgive me. Namaste. I'm out of here. We're done for the week. I'll see you next Friday. Thank you for listening, and please forgive me, won't you? Namaste.